Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Listen to KMOX anytime, anywhere. Download the radio.com app today.
I have a confession. I'm addicted to the news.
You know I'm totally off script right now.
Journalism is cool again, and you have endless content, let's be honest.
And this is how I got elected, by being off script.
Now, Mark Reardon.
I've seen people almost go to the bathroom in their pants in his presence.
On St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Blues now on the offensive draw, and here's Jaden Schwartz. In behind the net for Schenn. Puck along the wing. Bouwmeester touched it back to Schenn. Gets it to Schwartz on the near side in front. Forced to Bouwmeester, knocked away. Tarasenko, a slapper, they score! Tarasenko's shot deflected to Jaden Schwartz. He taps it in the open 4x6. And the Blues have taken a 2-0 lead. Tarasenko brings it in. Down low, Perron. Back door, it's knocked away, deflected in, they score!
Yeah, and it just kept getting better from there. What a game yesterday. Chris Kerber along with us this afternoon to talk about it. We'll get you all set to go on all the rest of the stories of the day in just a couple of moments, but I have to start with the Blues and the Stanley Cup fever that has gripped the city for weeks now, moving in a positive direction. Kerbs, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm awesome, Mark. How are you?
I think we could both agree. I think you'd be okay with this if you don't have to take any more trips to the West Coast this year, right?
I would be very appreciative of that fact.
Well, this season, we should say this, because the year will still end up in the next season as well. But boy, I will, in all honesty, tell you, I didn't see a minute of that game. I listened to a little of you guys. I was on the golf course yesterday, but I felt pretty good when I kept hearing you guys, you know, call goals early in the game.
Well, you know, San Jose came out with a heck of a push. They hit a post early on, and you know, the Blues got a couple of lucky bounces. I think the Sharks had three or four posts in that game. And you know what? And the Blues have been on the receiving end of that so many times, Mark, where you come out, you play like a great 5 minutes, and you're just dominating, and then the other team scores a goal, and it just zaps you real quick. And then that's what the Blues did. A turnover by their key defenseman, Erik Karlsson. A slap shot from above the circle from Oscar Sundqvist. It beat Martin Jones. A soft goal given up by Jones. And the Blues really rolled from there. So the unwavering aspect of this hockey team just continues to loom large.
That arena got pretty quiet quickly, didn't it?
It did. And you know what? We talked to Chris Thorburn during the broadcast about what it's like to take the crowd out of it. And he says, you know what you realize is, you know, when you do that, especially in a building that can be as loud as San Jose can be on a regular basis, you realize that you've done your job. And he goes, and that's what fuels you. It's not so much you're sitting on the bench thinking, all right, yeah, we took the crowd out of it. You're like, man, this place is quiet, which means we're doing something right in this game.
You know, obviously, you have players being asked already about making the finals. You don't want to get too far ahead of yourself because there's still work to do. And I think stating the obvious here, the Sharks are a good enough team to win two in a row.
Oh, absolutely. Not only are they good enough, they've done it, and they've done it in this playoff season. So, you know, they forced the Game 7 against Las Vegas that eventually led to that Game 7 victory. They've actually played two Game 7s and won two Game 7s. Only two other teams in the history of the Stanley Cup final have gone through as many as three Game 7s to win the Stanley Cup. And so they're poised and ready for this. Now, how healthy will they be? How does that play a role? Well, I guess we're going to find out. They were skating today, this morning, probably right about now in San Jose, and then we're going to be flying here after their practice. So a lot of news to come out of their locker room yet, if they're going to be upfront about any of it. But this is a team you cannot take for granted. They got enough skill. They easily can come right back and win two in a row, as they've already shown.
I didn't know you. So you're still out there right now?
No. We're back.
Oh,
home.
You're back.
The Blues. I'm talking
got
San Jose
it.
Was the one that was practicing.
Got it.
And then flying.
I'm easily
we came in last night.
Sorry, I'm easily confused. So you just have to give me a pass on that for a Monday. You know, it's interesting. Jaden Schwartz now has more goals in the playoff games than he did in the regular season. Obviously, some injuries there that would have affected that, but that's pretty cool.
Well, you know what, and we talked all season long about it. Like, it's amazing that he didn't score many goals because of the chances he had. I mean, he'd have a run of 18 shots on goal over three games and nothing to show for it. And all of a sudden, the playoffs hit, and he's got something to show for it. He's two goals behind Logan Couture for the league-leading goals scored here in the playoffs. I think he's one goal shy of tying Brett Hall for the most goals scored ever in a playoff season for a St. Louis Blue. He's had two hat tricks in these playoffs, which is a rarity. I mean, he's really just been outstanding.
So I'm going to kind of break my own rule here about not getting too far ahead of ourselves, but everyone keeps talking about Boston and how good Boston is and can we beat Boston. Let's take care of business here and then see what can happen, because we know in championships anything can happen. As good as the Bruins are, and they certainly look dominating, the Blues are the better team between these two. That's why I have confidence they're going to win either tomorrow night or on Thursday. But is it true that no matter what happens here, the finals will begin a week from today?
Yes, the schedule released by the National Hockey League would be that the finals would begin on May 27th, and it would start up in Boston, with Boston having home ice in the first two games. So, that's kind of the way it works. And you know, you would think, well, if two teams got done early, why would you wait a week? Well, a lot of infrastructure and a lot of TV things have to happen to host the finals, as you know.
So, game three would be here on June 1st if it's the Blues, obviously, 7 p.m., game 4 here on the 3rd, and then game 6 here on the 9th, on Sunday the 9th, seems like Sunday the 9th at home seems like a pretty good day to win it all and just start the parade planning, right?
That way everybody would have enough time to call their employers and say, I'm sick for the next 5 days.
I think a lot of people are going to do that, Kerbs. All right, so let's see what happens tomorrow night here, and I think that the fans would be overwhelmingly thrilled if they can get it done here on the home ice, and it was a great win yesterday. So let's enjoy the moment and see if we can take care of business tomorrow night.
All right, but sounds good, Mark. One another big one to go. They got to reset and clinch something before any fun can really happen.
Thanks, Kerbs.
Okay, bud.
That's Chris Kerber with us this afternoon on KMOX. We'll have much more as the afternoon rolls along into Total Information PM as well. All right, let's see where we're gonna head this afternoon. I did not have any time last week to take calls about the heartbeat bills. It passed in Missouri on Friday. The legislative session wrapped up. State Senator Bill Eichel is going to give us the whole lowdown on that. And I do want to take some calls about these heartbeat bills this afternoon. We haven't taken calls in a while. Dave, you remember how to do that? Remember to answer the phone? We'll find out a little bit later this hour. Abortion is one of those issues that, you know, I used to take calls about many, many years ago, and I thought maybe we weren't going to do that again, but we are, considering what's going on in this country right now. Scott Jennings is with us this afternoon, CNN contributor. He's in Louisville this afternoon. Dan Reardon is going to talk about the PGA Championship. And I have a great local golf story to share this afternoon as well, about a tournament that I played in over the weekend that something I think pretty cool and emotional happened. So that's all coming up, plus a bunch of audio and an audio cut of the day. I do have to just quickly mention Game of Thrones. Let me just give you my brief non-spoiler Game of Thrones recap. It's amazing to me how many people complain. And look, I'm not happy with everything that happened this season. I'm going to tell you that right now. I thought it was very uneven. I think I could make the case that in retrospect, and this is always easy for somebody to say who's not a creator of the show or participating in the show as a producer, that maybe we want to stretch this one out to two different seasons and had a few storylines that could have been more transitional and less, I'd say, hokey. Sometimes things got a little hokey in the last few episodes, but it is amazing to me, and this happens with a lot of television shows, how entitled the fans get. John Sexton wrote about it on Hot Air this morning, and if you look at it, it happened with The Sopranos. I don't know that it happened with Big Bang Theory last week. That was a pretty good finale. I ended up watching it over the weekend, but you have people out there, women are upset because they think that the women characters were mistreated, even though this show has had more powerful female characters than maybe any other major show in history. All right, so there's that. But, you know, the white dudes win in the end. If the white dudes come out on top, you can't have that. That's bad, right? And then you have folks that just aren't satisfied with anything that happened in the past few episodes. And again, I would take issue. I thought that some of the episodes were not up to par. But if you go back, and this would be my advice for people out there who have not yet watched Game of Thrones, if you've dabbled with it, you've thought about it, you've probably heard some of this stuff in the past couple of weeks, I would say it is well worth your time to dive into this amazing piece of television history. And if you start watching season one and you get through those first three episodes, because you got to get through those first three episodes, you got to pay attention. You have to put your phone down when you're watching the show. You have to probably read the recaps to know the characters. You get to that last season, and I still think it's a little ridiculous that people are saying that they feel ultimately let down and maybe even regretful that they watched the show in the first place, which I think is ridiculous when you think about it. But you have the toxic fandom out there. You have the frustrated feminists. You have cast members reacting this afternoon, too. And I think that, let me see if I can do this without a, I don't know if I could do this without a spoiler, because several of the cast members were tweeting or responding to questions about the backlash from the people who watched the show. And I just think that it's gone over the top. So I'm going to stick with Game of Thrones. Not completely satisfied. Last night, I liked some of it. I really liked the penultimate episode last weekend. But for those people who think that this was not foreshadowed or telegraphed throughout the entire show of the eight seasons, what happened in these past few episodes, you need to go back and watch the show again, because all this stuff was laid out. I don't know about super specifically, but there were things all along the way with Mother Dragons that telegraphed some of the things that happened. And I think people just have short-term memories when it comes to that. All right, we'll move on from Game of Thrones, since a lot of people still haven't watched last night, or you're not into the show. But I'm still going to say, I'm going back and try to watch the whole thing over again. There's no doubt about that. Look, if we're honest, I mean, looking at Mad Men, I can say quite candidly that I didn't think the last season of Mad Men was spectacular. Didn't probably meet the expectations of fans either, but it was still one of the better shows in all of television. It's 2:16. State Senator Bill Eigel is going to join me next. A wrap-up of the legislative session. We'll talk about the heartbeat bill. We'll have some time for some phone calls later this hour as well.
Miss any part of the Mark Reardon Show? Download the podcast anytime.
Initiating download. Stand by.
At KMOX.com/Reardon.
Welcome back. If you miss any part of the show, of course, you can listen online at KMOX.com/Reardon. You can listen live by downloading the Radio.com app. I guess if you want the podcast, KMOX.com/Reardon. Listen live, the Radio.com app. Of course, the Reardon Roundtable on Friday, sponsored by the Better Business Bureau, a standards-based organization, advancing marketplace trust. We'll talk Blues hockey a little bit later this afternoon. We had Chris Kerber on. We'll get in with it. Hey, Dave, do you know if it's Rabier or Ferrario today? Never can tell, but one of those guys will be here. During Total Information PM, let's chat with State Senator Bill Eigel. Post-legislative session, the 2019 session, wraps up on Friday with a flurry of activity. As always, Senator, how are you? Welcome back.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for having me.
When we last visited, that was on Wednesday, when you guys were kind of in the middle of this filibuster over the economic development situation and that bill and some disagreements with the governor's office. Just out of curiosity, what happened with that? How come that whole thing collapsed?
Well, we had to make a tough call to sit down, because as much as we were opposed to that type of incentive package, which was picking winners and losers, and it was benefiting the few over the many, we needed to get on to an even more important conversation, and that was the conversation about protecting the sanctity of life. And I'm pleased to report that that sacrifice was not in vain, because on Wednesday, actually it was Thursday morning, by the time we got done, we were able to pass the most comprehensive pro-life bill that we've ever seen pass in the state of Missouri.
But, I mean, can we be honest and say that the whole filibuster was basically about that? Because you didn't really get anything in return for that when it came to economic development, did you?
Well, when it came specifically to economic development, unfortunately, the governor really wasn't willing to move on that. And unfortunately, a lot of our fellow caucus members were willing to sacrifice the pro-life issue in order to get these economic giveaways. The conservative caucus, the five other members of the Senate, including myself, were not willing to do that. So ultimately, we made a tough call and we sat down. But what we achieved by getting the passage of that heartbeat bill was tremendous. We got not only protections for unborn children at the eighth week of development, we also got additional resources for pregnancy resource centers around the state. We got additional restrictions all across the abortion spectrum. So I think it was the right call to make, and I think that we did a good job starting a conversation about economic development and what the proper role of government is when it comes to picking winners and losers. And we'll continue that into next session, but
We got the win we were looking for, and that was on pro-life.
Is that win, in your mind, simply because it's a case that go before the Supreme Court? I mean, it's unlikely that these laws will take effect until the courts make some decisions, correct?
That's correct. Well, I think that's correct. Of course, you and I don't know exactly what's going to happen, but I certainly the legal challenge is part of the story, and it may be that even if certain parts of it are challenged, other parts of it, like the legislation we got passed improving access and availability for pregnancy resource centers, will go into effect. So I think there was a lot to like about that bill, and you know, there's no day like today when it comes to when's a good time to fight for life. So we did that, and here we are.
You don't think, Bill, and I think this might be a rhetorical question. We talked about it last week, and I'm pretty sure you don't feel this way, but I think I have some concern, and it's difficult when you talk about these issues because there are harsh realities when it comes to the loss of human life, which I'm quite troubled by. I've always been baffled in the aftermath of these bills, remain baffled by the response by many on the left that approach this issue with a callousness that I'm just stunned and saddened by. On the other hand, I think that the other side goes too far when it comes to the infanticide portions of their legislations in, you know, pieces of legislation in other states. But I think that maybe you can make the case that there's an overreach here and in Georgia and Alabama as well. Now, you're going to disagree with that, but you realize, and I think that there are people that certainly believe, maybe we talked about this on Wednesday, they believe in restrictions for abortion. I think most people believe that reasonable restrictions for abortion should be in place, whether they're pro-choice or pro-life. The other side of the equation is, and I've got a piece that's just stunning in front of me right here by a woman named Laura Penny, who thinks that she's advocating, and I think a lot of people on the left advocate for no restrictions whatsoever, which is kind of shocking to me. But do you think that there is any kind of political risk here for something when it comes to voters thinking this is a bit of an overreach, women voters obviously in particular?
Well, I got to be honest, you know, for the area that I represent out here in St. Charles County, I think the feeling is a lot of support for the bill that we passed. And there's ultimately a point at which I'm not basing my opinions on defending life based on what necessarily is going to happen in the next election. The reality is, I was very clear with my constituents before I was elected that I was going to come down to Jefferson City and do everything that was within my power to help defend the sanctity of life. And that was a very clear decision. It's on every one of my political campaign signs. So I think that it was very clear what I was going to do. And I feel like passing this bill is making good on probably what was the number one commitment in my campaign cycle. So I feel pretty comfortable that I'm on the same page with my constituents. And as it comes to defending life, if there's something else I can do next year, I'm going to continue to take those steps because I think it's that important. You know, I've always defined the proper role of government as defending the rights of the citizen. And amongst these are the defense of life, liberty, and property. So
but
we'll continue to do that.
Right. And I asked you this question last week, but I mean, I think where people are having difficulty is on the no exceptions. So in the final version of the bill that passed, are there exceptions?
There is exceptions for where the life of the mother is in danger. There are not exceptions for rape and incest.
And you gave me an explanation for that last week, but let's say you have a 13, 14-year-old girl who is raped and then is forced to take the child to term because there's no exception for rape or incest. You're okay with that?
Well, somehow the conversation has gotten to the point that if you're okay with these exemptions not being present, that somehow you're okay with rape or incest. That's not the case at all. Those are tragedies as well in our society, and we've got to do everything we can to prevent those and keep our young women from coming to that type of harm. But that being said, the tragedy of rape and incest shouldn't beget another tragedy, which is a loss of life. So I know that this is a very emotional issue. I know that people come down in different areas on this particular issue, but this is something that I've prayed about a lot and that I'll continue to keep fighting for.
I tend to break these things down, and this is more difficult for me now because I'm the father of a daughter. You know, I've had two boys, so now I look at it, I think, a little bit from a different perspective. I've been married for a while, a couple of times, but I guess when you think about, I can't even imagine the horror of being raped or the horror of being raped and turning up pregnant. So, you know, sometimes I think of these things in terms of my daughter in the future. And I understand your case. I really do. And I mentioned from the beginning, Bill, I think the other side they never look at these things as human lives, and the callousness is outrageous to me, and I think it's outrageous to a lot of people. But where the overreach comes into play is when you have extremes on both sides, and that's where I guess I'm a little concerned. I'm very, very uncomfortable with these types of bills right now, even though I'm pro-life, because I think that there is, unfortunately, an opportunity to move backwards here, and that somewhat concerns me.
Sure, I get that, and Mark, I have a daughter as well. She's 12 years old. And certainly as parents, we never want harm to come to our children, and we certainly don't want harm to come to any women in the nation on those types of issues. But that being said, I've heard a lot of inspirational stories about adults who were conceived in those type of tragedies growing up and being able to live very productive and loving lives. And that those are miracles as well. So those are very difficult questions, but ultimately where my mind has come down is that I'm going to continue to do whatever I can to protect life. And that may be, in one sense, perceived as being a very narrow vision, but it's a very rock-solid foundation to where I always know where I'm coming from, and I'll continue to fight battles as I see them in defense of life.
State Senator Bill Igel from the St. Charles area. I appreciate it. Thank you, Bill.
Yep. Thanks, Mark.
I have not taken phone calls on this topic, so I will. Dave, open up the phone. We haven't done that in a while, so let's do it this afternoon. 436-7900, 1-800-925-1120. Your thoughts on the heartbeat bills, not only in Missouri, but elsewhere. I'm going to pass along some of this column from this woman that I mentioned, Laura Penny, here in a moment as well. We'll get your reaction to that.
Get ready for the Cards and Royals Tuesday night. Ameren Total Access, 620. First pitch, 715. Hear it here on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals. KMOX.
I mentioned and this often bothers me all the time, the callousness of a lot of folks on the pro-choice side. This woman, Lori Penny, I honestly don't know who she is. This was something that I found, I think, on Real Clear Politics over the weekend. But she focuses on how, making this statement, these laws are not about whether a fetus is a person. They're about enshrining maximalist control over the sexual autonomy of women as a foundational principle of conservative rule. They are about owning women. They're about women as things. Well, I know a lot of women who are pro-life, probably more women that are pro-life than men who are pro-life, quite candidly. So I think it's monstrous, the perspective that many people on, especially the extreme pro-choice infanticide side of this equation are. But you know, I'm just being, and I said this last week when I talked about it, I'm going to be wishy-washy on this one. I am, because I'm just deeply troubled by both extremes. I think a lot of people are with me on this. Maybe not the people we're going to hear from this afternoon, but I do think it's a really, really tough issue. Missouri's law, by the way, has backup provisions. This is something I don't think we've talked about yet. So if the courts come in and they think that the fetal heartbeat standard should not be at 8 weeks, the abortion can be halted at 14, 18, or 20 weeks. And then after 20 weeks, the baby is determined late-term pain-capable unborn child. I think it's completely unrealistic to allow abortions late-term like that. And I think that that's where some of these other states have gone, Missouri in the other direction. Let's take some phone calls about it. Jeff, you're on KMOX. Good afternoon.
Hey, Mark. How you doing?
I'm good.
You got to help me out here, Mark. I'm just having a real hard time getting my head wrapped around this. How is a baby who's made in a consensual act? You were talking about your daughter, so it would be your grandchild. How is that baby, you say you're pro-life, how is that baby a human being who should be protected from murder different than, now, I don't want to get branded as that guy, all right?
No, right, but look, I think I know where you're going with this, and this is why, ask your question. I will do my best to answer it, but this is what makes it.
Yeah, rape and incest are awful, but we're not talking about the act. We're talking about the baby.
Right.
So if your daughter, God forbid, if your daughter gets raped and conception occurs, we're still, Mark, talking about your grandchild. We're still talking about your daughter's child. I mean, if this is logic. Let's take politics out of it. Let's take emotion out of it. Let's just be logical. In both instances, one instance being terrible, but in both instances, from my perspective, from every medical textbook that's out there, once conception happens, we're talking about a new, distinct human being. Now, the way they got here...
But you're going to... I get that point, but then you're going to get into the definition of life, right? So is a six-week-old, is a three-week-old, is a six-week, eight-week-old, where there's a heartbeat that's detectable but no real brain activity, is that a human being? Look, I'm not going to answer that question because I can't answer that question. I know there's different schools of thought and where life begins. That's the whole abortion debate, you know, and how it's been since before 1973. So I don't know if you feel differently from week to week. Is 5 weeks acceptable and 7 weeks isn't, for example?
I go with the medical textbooks.
Well, the medical textbooks are all over the place on these things, I think.
Well, they didn't used to be. And please don't tell me the science has changed. It's not. At conception, you've got a distinct, unique human being. Now, I think where you're wanting to go is down that rabbit hole of personhood. You know, I mean, my dad at the end of his life, you know, one could say, well, he's not a person. He wasn't autonomous. He wasn't thinking well, this, that, and the other thing. But I sure as hell wasn't going to kill him.
I'm just thinking through the analogy here. I understand. I'm going to take some more phone calls. This is a tough one for me. It really is. And, you know, I want to hear different perspectives. Rick, you're on KMOX.
Mark, when I first talked to your screener, I was about to chew somebody's head off, and I backed up a little bit. I was born and raised Catholic. I'm pro-life. But I'd also believe that a woman's body is her body, and that's her choice. And the representative from St. Charles said that he prayed on this. And I'm thinking, wait a second, now that's your prayer. There's another woman who doesn't follow your faith, who doesn't follow your religion. Maybe she wants to have an abortion. That's what happened to the separation of church and state. This is a woman's body, not his prayer.
Well, but it's okay, but this is where I fall on the other side. You said you're pro-life or pro-choice. I'm confused.
I'm pro-life.
Okay, all right. No, that's fine. That's fair. Because the screen said something different. But you could say it's your body, it's your choice thing always falls flat with me because I do think, and again, this is so difficult because you can't say, okay, and I know people want to say 6 weeks, you're not a human. After 6 weeks, you are. I can't do that because I don't know the answer. I don't. Maybe it's 10 weeks, and then after that, it's not. What I do know is that there is a certain point, what that medically definable point is, that I'm very uncomfortable allowing women the right to, you know, exterminate that baby, whether it's inside or outside the womb, which we've seen in other states.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
How many children are there right now in our foster system that have no parents?
Way too many.
Yeah, and I have a feeling this is just going to create it even worse. If this gentleman in St. Charles could find a way to put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's going to. Here's the problem. This is one of the reasons I have difficulty with it. I don't think it's going to create more unwanted pregnancies. I think it's going to create more people trying to go black market for abortions.
But what he said was we need to correct the people doing the raping. I said, well, that's fine and dandy, but until you get that corrected, you're trying to push the toothpaste back in the tube. And I also think
it's very easy to talk about other people's kids, even if you have kids, and say, well, I would do this and I would do that. Until you're faced with that situation, I think it's very, very different. Dave, you're on KMOX.
Yes, sir. Maybe I'm not understanding this whole idea. You know, it always seems to be reported that you can't have an abortion or it's a woman's right to choose. However, when it involves rape or incest, if a woman or a girl is raped or there's incest involved and they become pregnant, don't they have up to the 6 or the 8 weeks to actually get an abortion?
Under the terms of this law, yes.
So I
think the case that's made by some people is, and I know that there's pregnancy testing if you're raped. I don't know how it would work. Incest would not be necessarily reported. Maybe rape wouldn't be reported either. But the difficulty, at least it's my understanding, that the other side would have to this say, look, you don't even really know you're pregnant until I have a 4-year-old daughter. My wife and I weren't aware of that until 6 weeks after a dog bite. My wife's stomach was bothering her. And about 3 nights after asking her, hey, what's going on? She said, my stomach's bothering her for 3 nights, and we realized she was pregnant. And the reason that the dog bite plays in, for people who don't remember that part of the story, is because she was put on antibiotics. I failed to have surgery, and the little miracle was born. And look, I was in a position, a very realistic position of confronting these very issues that we're talking about 5 summers ago. It was right about this time when the miracle happened, and then 6 weeks later into the month of July. Now, we never really even went in the other direction. you know, you have conversations, you panic like I did, and then you move forward. I can't even envision it any other way. But everybody's situation is different.
Mm-hmm. You know, it just, I guess my problem is the way that it's reported on both sides. And I'm pro-choice. I was born and raised Catholic. I'm pro-choice. And in my mind, and maybe I'm just being simple-minded about this, but in my mind, if a girl is raped and there's the possibility of a pregnancy, and if she actually reports the rape, like you said, they may not even report it, but I would think that that would be something that would check immediately and can be taken care of immediately.
I think that you can. I mean, you have the ability to use the morning after pill, and I don't know all the particulars of the science and if there's age limits for some of those medications, but I understand your point, Dave. Thanks for calling. I'm going to take a break here, and we'll come back with more phone calls. Interestingly enough, Dave, let's prioritize females here. I'm not, every time I talk about this, I get males calling in.
The Pitch.
KMOX is the exclusive Cardinal station. When the Cards take a break, we're talking baseball on the Munganess St. Louis Honda Sports Open Line. Weeknights at 6:15 on the Voice of the Cardinals.
All right, quickly back to the phone calls. We go on the heartbeat bill and the abortion issue. Unfortunately, I thought I was well past my days on the radio arguing about abortion, but apparently not. Pam, you're next on KMOX. Good afternoon.
How are you, Mark?
I'm good.
Thanks so much for giving this important issue so much time. I just am very grateful to the Missouri legislatures for passing such a strong and courageous pro-life bill. And as far as the rape and incest exception, I mean, of course, it's a horrible situation for a woman to be in. But one violent act doesn't eliminate the first violent act. And why should an unborn child be given the death penalty for the crime of its father? The other thing, Mark, this bill also contained an increase tax donation for donations to crisis pregnancy centers. Now, Missouri has an alternative to abortion program that's funded through its budget and also Show Me Healthy Babies. So, you know, the Missouri legislature is very concerned about helping women in crisis pregnancies.
I'm just going to ask the question from one of my friends on the left's perspective, because this is what they say all the time. And Pam, you probably know this. Is the Missouri legislature committed to providing resources for the women who have to go through those pregnancies and when they're financially challenged to raise those children?
Well, that's exactly what the tax donation to the crisis pregnancy centers does, is to
no,
help women.
No, that's not what it does. That's not what that does.
Yes, it does. I mean, there
How does it help the woman financially if they have the baby? I'm playing devil's advocate here just a little bit, but how does it do that?
Like Thrive and Our Ladies Inn, you know, they help women with their education. They help them learn how to budget. They teach them how to run a household. Our Ladies Inn even takes in expectant mothers.
Yeah, no, there are great, look, maybe I'm asking the question the wrong way. There are great, great resources for women in St. Louis and across the state and across the country when it comes to helping them through education. And I understand that, but are you saying that tax dollars are actually going to those organizations? I'd have to check the particulars of the bills because I don't know exactly how much money is going in that direction.
Donations that are made by individuals to those organizations are tax deductible.
But they already are, aren't they?
Well, they have been increased. The deductibility of those donations has been greatly.
But they're not, my point is, they're not giving tax dollars to these organizations to help them. They're increasing the tax deduction. Which is fine, but again, that only goes so far.
They're going to help organizations that are helping women in crisis pregnancies, but regardless, the death penalty for an unborn child, I mean, all of these are important issues that we need to address and we need to provide as many services as we can. But, you know, giving the death penalty to an unborn child because we have other problems to address, that just doesn't seem to make any sense.
All right, Pam, thanks for the call. Nikki, you're next on KMOX.
Oh, thank you, Mark Reardon. I'm sorry. Let me calm down. Pam, I love you, but honey, if the government is trying to tell every woman what she can do with her body, then the government needs to help her raise that child. I don't care about the extra donation that they're going to give to the nonprofit organization. It's the government telling me that I can't destroy the fetus or what I can and cannot do. That was not even my original point, but that just made me more angry.
Okay.
Mark, I'm sorry. Listen, When is a female legislator going to put something in a bill format that says, hey, guys, you guys can't do A, B, and C with your body? I'm absolutely livid that every time it's something about our bodies.
No, but Nikki, wait. Okay.
Guys telling us what to do.
Okay, but this is one of the parts of the argument that's always made me very confused, because is there something that you want to tell me to do with my body that's going to cause the death of another human being? I'm unaware that there is.
So you all
I just
are saying,
don't know.
No, I don't think there's something that I can say to you, this is going to create somebody's death other than your hands. You know, you're
right.
Shooting somebody, stabbing
well,
somebody.
Let's say we were another species. I'm trying to think. I just saw this penguin movie. Maybe there's a species where the, you know, the mating process takes place, and then in America in 2019, this may be happening anyway. And then the it's conceived the way we all know how babies are conceived. And then somehow we've changed the, just play along here. We've changed the dynamics of the pregnancy, and the male has to carry the baby, which again, you people are transitioning right now. And there's probably cases like this that are going to be made. But then that's where it sort of applies to a man making a decision with what happens with that child. So look, I've heard it for decades and decades and decades now, almost 50 years. The arguments about how it's a woman's body and you should, as a male, not have the right to say anything about a woman's body. But there's really nothing that you could offer me, as far as I know, as an analogy that would be the same application to a male's body, is there?
No, there is nothing that I can argue for body to body. That's correct. My point, though, is it is always the male legislators. I'm sorry, it is. I wish the females would say something. They never.
Well, they do. There's more. Yeah, I understand. There's more male lawmakers. Certainly in Alabama, I think it was all. I'd have to check on this. Might have been all males in the Senate, but there were certainly female Republicans who voted for this legislation in Missouri. There's no doubt about that.
That's true. And here's my second point is, again, back to caring for this child that the mother doesn't even want. So the lady and the gentleman, everybody's concerned about the death of this baby. And they use this, you know, murder of the baby or death of the unborn. Okay, but you all, what about the mother? What about the life that this child is getting ready to have with this mom who can't afford it? With his mom.
Well, Nikki, and I only got to let you because we're out of time, but these are the same. I feel like I'm in Groundhog Day on the abortion issue. Started talking about this doing talk radio in 1992. The same arguments back and forth never, ever change.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.